We've got Scully to get to, James Scully. And, in fact, James is going to look at Delmar, and we'll get some thoughts as well as his Haskell opinion. Tom Cassidy is going to come back down and join us from TVG. Tom had us for the first time last year here, right? Was it last year? 2 years ago. 2 years ago. Because last year, I couldn't make it here because they had the Captain Gala. And we have the Captain Gala now. It's less than a week. Thursday night, CaptainCares.org. Join us. We're going to honor Shug McGahey and the Summer of Easy Goer next Thursday. Also, Lisa Malloy and Rerun being honored and more. Should be a lot of fun at the Saratoga City Center. CaptainCares.org. Get tickets and join us. There's live auction. There's silent auction. We're gonna Q&A with Shug about the summer of 89. If you've never gone to a fundraiser at Saratoga, make this your first. I promise you're going to enjoy it. We'll stay right here just about 50 minutes. It's Dennis Drazen. Good morning. How you been?
Good to see you.
If you get a minute, circle back. All right. We'll get a Dennis Drazen visit in. James Scully, though, standing by. Scully, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks.
How'd we do last week? I can't.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, not. I don't mean that. I don't mean that. I don't mean asking for it. That was obviously a heartbreak. I mean in terms of plays.
We did. I did okay. You know, I had a couple of winners there. Definitely the horse of Brad Cox's that, defended its title. And it wasn't, it was a little chalky on the evening, but it was a good night of racing, and they definitely beat the heat by a week, you know, with all this heat wave going
through. That's true. Good point. And when it comes to asking for it, obviously, I mean, there's nothing worse than that. When we debuted Carlisle Bell, she ducked out. She ducked out at a certain point and near the wire when she was finishing up and dropped. Who was it? Who was on? Paco was it? Paco, I think. And drop Paco Lopez, and there's nothing worse than that. I think that's the first time we ever had a rider unseated, so I can imagine. But right at the start like that, your heart goes in your throat.
Oh yeah, and I've seen the still photos. I mean, he's got like both knees like on
it's
the
unbelievable.
Ground. His face is like buried in there, and first off, thankfully Julien Leperoux wasn't seriously injured. There was a little concern afterwards about his ankle, but it was the x-rays came back clean, and so happy he didn't get hurt when the horse the horse absolutely threw him to the ground and threw his freaking head into the ground, but then really ran, courageously after that start, and circled the lead on the far turn, sort of blew the turn into the stretch, and then really sort of just engaged. Mr. Money went after him, of course, without a rider, but it was pins and needles afterwards, but he came back and walked just fine, and we got him back to Churchill the next day, and x-rays came back clean, and he could work here next week, so everything's good to go with him after that scary incident.
James, give me a minute. I want to get a couple of words in with Dennis Drazen while we're downstairs, and we never miss an opportunity to talk to Dennis. And since I saw you last.
Boy, we've been doing a lot of things since I saw you last.
Yes.
We blew past that $3 billion in sports betting in New Jersey. That's great.
Unbelievable. It's exceeded every expectation.
It has. I mean, everyone laughed in the beginning when I said we'd be at $1 billion by the end of the year, and we blew past that, and, now we're at $3 billion. So, everybody's happy in New Jersey, and a lot of other states are coming on board. And I see you're getting a little action in.
We'll see. We'll see. Are you surprised at all? Is there any aspect of how this is unfolding that has come as a surprise?
Sports betting?
Yes.
Sports betting, you know, I think that, you know, I was all in on sports betting from day one. You know how persistent we were in pursuing what we thought was, you know, the proper result. The United States Supreme Court in May of last year gave us a victory. We acted swiftly here in New Jersey. We got rolling, and, you know, every bit of it has pretty much met our expectations. We're ready here at Monmouth to launch our new venue. So we're going to probably be breaking ground after the season is over.
Wow.
On a new building that's going to be probably the flagship for William Hill, $10 million addition. Probably going to put it on the valet parking side, and we're in the design phase now.
Nice.
And, you know, hopefully we'll get that open about a year after we break ground. So that's exciting. And sports betting has really opened up the track again. You know, we have always had simulcasting during the off season, so it's not dead. But now you have a venue that's alive all year round. You have the racing season, which goes from May until the end of October for all intents and purposes. But you're in the midst of football season then. So, you know, the other side of the building is alive, and people are actually going to both spots. They hang out both in the grandstand and the clubhouse. With the new addition, I think people will be attracted to the clubhouse. But some people, you know, like their home. They've settled the spot, or it's their lucky spot. So, you know, they'll keep going. And, you know, it's all good for us. You know, we're very happy with sports betting. And, you know, our racing product is great this year, too. With the subsidy from the state, you know, they gave $100 million to the racing industry over a five-year period. We have benchmarks to meet to show that it's making a difference. But the thoroughbreds got half of it. The standardbreds got half. $10 million went into purses here at Monmouth Park. We're going to be averaging $500,000 a day by the end of the year, which is an uptick from about $3.25 million last year.
Yep.
And the strength of the product, I think, has been demonstrated by it. We have a lot more horses on the backside, and all's good here at Monmouth.
Well, and happy, as always, to be here. I do have to ask you, because the buck will stop with you, talk about the heat decision and how you're handling this and the expectation of running tomorrow.
Heat?
It's not the heat. It's the humidity.
Horses have been running in the heat for longer than I'm alive. And you don't hear anyone asking, you know, why we're running at Gulfstream, you know, during the summer. And
fair point.
You know, other jurisdictions. But here at Monmouth, we take the health of horses very seriously. You know, we've looked at this. We've been tracking it. We've done this before. It's not the first time we've, you know, had extreme weathers. I remember Rachel Alexandra's year. You know, we went through the same criteria. And we look at all the factors that we're supposed to look at the heat index, make sure the horses will be safe. We've got extra precautions, you know, in place. We've got misting machines, a lot of water trucks, a lot of hoses to hose the horses off. And I always have the luxury of moving the post time back. So if I think it's extreme and that there's a problem during the day tomorrow, I can move on the fly. And I can make the post time 7:30, 8 o'clock if need be. So our first priority is going to be taking care of the horses. And I know that a lot of people are saying, well, these other jurisdictions canceled, and they're not ocean jurisdictions. We have a cool breeze. You know, I come here some days, it's so hot on the paddock side, but I go on the other side,
true,
it's actually cold, you know.
Yeah. Or cool. Yeah, I mean, you do have the, in fact, Steve Haskin mentioned, behind the building where the pavement is, it has a tendency to be very hot. But then on the front side, which is, you know, facing ocean, you know, ocean side, you get some breeze, and it's a little bit different, a little bit more comfortable. You know, I lived in Brielle. I mean, I certainly, and I can only think of one particular year at Saratoga. We had 2006, and that the Eastern Seaboard was enveloped in that incredible heat in August that one year, and everybody pretty much, but that was like but I want to think that was early in the week too, so it wasn't as acute in terms of race cards. You know, there were only a couple of people. Saratoga was running Monday, Delaware and Philly, I think, maybe Finger Lakes. So it didn't have this big Saturday focus.
No, but what do you do? I mean, yeah. I'm not being critical of anyone. They're doing the right thing for their horses. But, for example, Saratoga's canceling Saturday. And they got out in front of it. But now the temperatures are shifting a little bit, so it looks like Sunday's going to be just as bad. So do they cancel Sunday, too, now that they canceled Saturday? And if something happens Sunday because they didn't, are people going to say, well, you know, you set the standard for Saturday? And, but, you know, look, we all do what we can. You know, I think right now in this country, for whatever reasons, yeah. I'm not going to get into the Santa Anita issues, but the focus is on horse health, horse safety. And, you know, PETA's out there. You know, we expect them to, you know, be concerned, of course. But we are concerned about our horses. That's our living. That's our livelihood. Exactly. That's our legacy. You know, we want the horses to be safe. But we don't run a winter meet here. You know, we run during the summer, and you have to expect some weather. And as I said, you know, if it gets to a point where all the factors come together and we think it's not safe for the horses,
you can
we're going to move the post times. You know, we can shorten the, you know, paddock
for
post. We can do a lot of things to try and make sure everything's good. But I think, you know, it's going to be light here till maybe 9-ish. You know, so I think we can get in the card later in the day if need be. But we're going to try and keep on schedule. And, you know, these days with weather predictions, it's not always what they say.
No.
So it's even already, you know, like 5 degrees less than what they thought it was going to be a couple of days ago. We've had a little rain down here. I think we're going to be fine. But even on a perfect day, with great weather, a horse can break down, and no one wants to see a horse break down.
That's a great point.
You know, for any reason. So, you know, we take it very seriously. I know there's a lot of people, you know, that are criticizing. A lot of people say things both ways. But at the end of the day, I guess this is on me. I make the decision, and I think we're supposed to run. And if I think we have to move the post times back in order to make sure there's an extra safety factor, then I'm going to do it. But I'll make that call on the fly tomorrow.
Steve Haskin just sent a note. He said the greatest Haskell that he ever covered and ever saw was 49er and Seeking the Gold. It was over 100 degrees that day. So
good point. Good point.
And in fact, Randy Moss reminded the guy was here too. Point given in 2001. And it was oppressive. I don't think the ambient conditions are any different than they would have been. It's the external conditions
Correct. That
is making
You're right.
that is
You're
putting
right.
this into such a you know, an acute focus. So,
but my greatest wish is that all the horses come back safely tomorrow, and that's going to be our focus, and we'll do what we have to do to protect our horses.
Well, certainly protecting the legacy and the viability of Monmouth Park, that was under your auspice and the horsemen, and not only did you take care of it, you changed the entire landscape of gambling in North America forever.
The legacy here is the horses, but I worry about the humans too. You know, it's hot weather, we have jockeys, we have seniors that are going to be coming out.
Patrons,
we want to make sure everybody is safe, and you know, if you choose to go to the beach tomorrow, you know, it's going to be dangerous there for you.
That's a good point.
All in all, I'm hoping for a great Haskell. And, you know, not that I wanted this to happen because, you know, the other jurisdictions, you know, certainly, you know, we'd like to see them racing. But this kind of puts more of a focus on Monmouth because
we're the only game in town.
The only game in town.
Right? Absolutely. You'll have the first half of the day and then moving. I think Woodbine's going to run a course. Ellis, though, is canceled today and tomorrow. And
Gulfstream's probably running.
Yeah, exactly.
California's
exactly.
Running,
exactly.
There'll be some other tracks.
Arlington. Marcus Hirsch reporting that Arlington was apparently there was meeting going on, but it'll be a quieter Saturday than usual, except right here at Oceanport, where 45,000.
Well, with the heat, you never know.
Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little.
You know, we had as many as 61,000 for American Pharoah, we've had as little as 35,000. But absent the heat, I would have expected 45,000. But you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, as always, a pleasure to come here. It's been watching, keeping an eye. The meet has gone well, as you point out. Clearly, you know, between what's transpired on the gaming front and with the money that the state has included a secure future that makes it easier to plan, and just couldn't be happier for Dennis, for you and everybody.
Thank you very much. I know you've been a supporter from the start, and you know we're happy to support you when we can.
It's my real honor to always come down, and it's one of my favorite venues. I've said this a million times. It was the first racetrack that I could come to on a you know, several day a week basis. And it really kind of changed. It was important in my own interests and development and passion for the game, because anybody that comes here, the people that come here for the first time, it's always my favorite, like after Haskell, for instance, or any time that somebody gets the occasion to come here. They're like, oh, my God. You know, you see pictures, and they think it's small and quaint, and they come, and they're invariably just blown away by, you know, what a jewel it is. It's one of the great venues in the sport.
It is. It's one of the world-class venues. It's a jewel for our sport, and, you know, it's been my obligation and pleasure to preserve it.
No, you did it against all odds.
Thank you.
And it continues to be an amazing accomplishment that on a week-to-week basis, watching legislation and watching the various states handling, you know, deciding how they're going to handle sports betting, and the industries that you essentially created, you know, by your perseverance. I'd walk around with a sign on my back or something. I don't know, Dennis.
You know,
it's an amazing. As an attorney, I've asked you this two or three times. I mean, what it's like to change the course of legal history, and it's got to just be a point of you got to read these stories as they evolve, and you just. What goes through your head?
No, it's almost the pinnacle of your career.
Sure. How could it not be?
Accomplish something like that. But I remember I've been a trial lawyer for a long time. My father founded the firm before me. And I used to come back after a huge win thinking I accomplished something. And the next day you'd say, okay, so you did that.
What's next?
Yep. What did you do today? So, you know, we have a lot more to accomplish here at Monmouth Park.
Good job.
I think the future of Monmouth Park and racing is that you have to create more reasons for people to come. You have to become a destination venue. You have to think ahead of the curve. You know, even though we have sports betting now and we have racing, we haven't lost track of wanting to have some casino gaming in the future. Esports is a hot thing, you know, that... You know, we're taking a look at. We want to get the younger demographics in here.
Good.
You know, when our current racing fans ultimately go on to, you know, a better place, you have to have replacements for them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you need to appeal to the younger generation. And, you know, you can't ever say, okay, I'm satisfied with what I've accomplished, because there's always something new to do. Once sports betting came, I thought it would be a little slower, but it isn't. The business of running the business, you know, becomes complicated and time-consuming. So, you know, our work is never done.
Well, and which begs one question, and not to run away again with this discussion, but making the wagering game, making the racing betting product competitive and more attractive from a pricing standpoint. You know, this is an area that, you know, as the sports betting grows and as the appeal of sports betting widens, the disparity between that product and its appeal versus, you know, the challenges that we face as an industry at pricing bets competitively is really, you know, in focus. And being criticized, I mean, that, you know, our takeout structure, and granted, we've got this cumbersome, you know, layers of tax and of, you know, all the, from bricks to mortar to the bet takers to, you know, to the processors to all the people that need to get paid. I mean, it's a reality, but how do we address that, Dennis? I mean, is that being looked at? I mean, how can we better attract players by giving them a product that is more interesting from a horse standpoint, whether it's turf racing, whether it's less races, whether it's less race days, you know, with bigger fields and you know, more competitive racing, that then also features wagers that are priced. I mean, I don't know how we're ever going to be competitive, you know, with a lot of the sports betting, but at least level the playing field to some point where the takeout is not as odious.
Well, you know, that opens up the door for a lot of subjects that we've been looking at for a long time. So, you know, I don't want to get on the soapbox.
I know it's a complex
no, but,
question.
But I would say I've always believed, but could never get it done. You know, so things that, you know, we feel strongly about, like, let's put sports betting aside for the moment. I always thought that our industry needs to be a league like the major sports leagues. I always thought we need to have a commissioner that has some power. You know, I thought that we need to look at things like you're talking about with the pricing and the takeout and, you know, trying to, you know, encourage bettors, you know, to bet into our pools. You know, I mean, people come up to me and they say, and I'm not being critical, I'm just giving you an example. So people came up to me about the bets that they were doing in California at Santa Anita about the roulette type bet. And there was some criticism, well, the takeout's too high. You know, a bettor can go to a casino and the takeout is 5 points something. And, you know, here the takeout is 15 and, you know,
20, 25.
Why would a bettor, you know, do that? And, you know, we have to look at pricing like that. Here at Monmouth, we're in a different position because, you know, the horsemen have the track. And so we can negotiate it with ourselves, you know, to make it fair for the bettors and try and attract people here. But at the end of the day, when I look at sports betting, you know, I've had arguments, you know, to use a word, you know, with some of the other racetracks about fixed odd wagering. You know, I think it's a good thing. But again, you talk about pricing. So the other tracks say, yeah, but right now we're taking out a blend of 20% and, you know, what's the fixed odds takeout going to be? You know, how are we going to get a fair share of the revenue unless we grow the business? Well, you're supposed to try and grow the business. So, for example, here at Monmouth, I'm trying to do, you know, some unique things that I hope will set a pattern for the rest of the country. We have, you know, parlays that have three races into a ball game or multiple races into a ball game or two ball games. Yesterday, I said to my team, I want to start offering wagers. It won't be on the Haskell because we have to put it together. But let's take our card and let's do an over and under on the totals of the numbers, the winning horses. So
that's interesting.
If race one, you have the two horse. In race three, you have the six horse. And, you know, you have to know how many you can't put out the line until you know the card, you know, because you wouldn't know how many, you know, to put into the over under. But you can do some interesting things to make people more excited about wagering on your product and attract a new type of customer that hasn't bet on us before. We have sports bettors that come here. And frankly, you know, this was a $400 billion illegal industry before it got legalized through our case. So I think a lot of our players, you know, were playing illegally betting sports. But now I see a lot of people come in to bet sports, and while they're waiting, they come over and they make a race bet, sometimes a sizable race bet, and vice versa. You know, some of our racing fans are going over to the sports book. You know, so you have to try and do things to attract new customers and to offer them, you know, a fair share, you know, on the wager. Me, you know, I'm a little different. You know, if I make a wager, I can't bet sports anyway because my position here, but in a parimutuel product, I'm happy if I win.
Yeah.
You know, so am I going to care that much? You know, if I win a little more, a little less? You know, probably not. I don't bet a lot, and it's just for the amusement. But a serious player, they care about that. And so you have to offer them, you know, the best opportunities. So some of the problems we run into, like we experimented at the Meadowlands a couple of years ago with the lower takeout. We got complaints from some of the other tracks and ADWs that they didn't like it. But at the end of the day, whether they like it or not, we all have to try and take ourselves out of the focus and talk about our customers. We have customers that we want to continue to bet. There's so much concern in the industry right now about horse racing in general. So, you know, we talk about bettors, you know, wanting to bet with faith. You know, race day medications, standardizing medications, you know, a lot of the problems in the industry that are out there, and we're talking about them, but you want bettors to be able to bet on your product with confidence. And no matter what you decide, and I don't want to get on the Lasix, you know, issue right now, but you just have some of the whales that say to you, hey, if you eliminate Lasix, I can't bet with confidence. If I know that horse was on Lasix and now he's going to run off Lasix, you know, that's a problem for me. You're not going to get as big a bet. If the culture changes in the country, you know, maybe the bettors will get used to it. For a while, it's going to be difficult.
But yeah.
I think we do have to do things in the country to have a better image for horse racing. I think that there's been a lot of negativity. And, you know, to me, you know, again, not being critical of anyone, but it kind of all started with all the breakdowns at Santa Anita.
No doubt.
And it kind of changed the conversation. And, you know, whether you're on one side of that argument or another, you have to pay attention to it. You know, it's a crisis out there in the industry right now, and you have concerns out in California and the PETA interests, and I'm not being critical of, you know, people who want to care for animals either. But at the end of the day, you know, horse racing is an industry that's not going away. And we have to do something to improve our public image and try and put everyone on a level playing field and attract customers and take a new look at the product and, you know, where it's going for the future.
No, it's a and it is a it's an ecosystem and as a collective and everybody has to be responsible in their own arena, and you know, they have to be good stewards of the game.
Yeah, you know, the pricing's difficult because, you know, we run Monmouth Park, so we have a backside. We have, you know, expenses. We don't charge day rate to horsemen for the stalls. So we have more expense than an ADW. Should the pricing be the same?
Oh, you know, that's
for a racetrack versus an ADW.
That's been the rub here. Pope would call the inverted pyramid, where, you know, we had the bricks and mortar were taking the smallest percentage of the simulcast dollar. It made no sense. The people that were putting on the show that had the biggest overhead were you know, and granted, it was some bad foresight by the bricks and mortar that put them in that position, that side of the industry in that position. But it doesn't it was an unsustainable model, and very slowly the bricks and mortar had been trying in signal negotiations to kind of balance that better. And maybe I don't know if we've gotten, and that's a fascinating conversation. Maybe there's a point soon where the industry as a collective can address, you know, where things have gone on that front, and is it time for the industry to work cohesively at lowering the pricing structure to the betterment? You know, Canterbury tried in a vacuum to, you know, lower takeout and to try to gain some interest and in industry-wide momentum, and they did get a boost. They didn't get enough of a boost in-house, you know, in on their signal to justify the lowering of price. But the reality was that people that were getting more money back on their wagers at Canterbury, they didn't necessarily only go back and bet that money at Canterbury. So it until the industry as a whole takes this message, you know, to heart and work together to bring down, you know, to bring down pricing, to bring the lower takeout, it's going to be very hard to, you know, to prove. I mean, other than what's happened, which is some individual new wagers like the 50-cent pick fives, you know, that have basically been introduced at a lower rate and have been met with wonderful success. But on an industry-wide basis, Dennis, unless we collectively have a discussion and act as an industry, cohesively, there's not going to be a progress on this topic, and we're going to find ourselves priced out.
Like we sit here, you know. Our industry, you know, and our racetrack, you know, is survives on selling bets.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I get a call from our customers, our bigger customers, that such and such ADW is offering me a 10% rebate. And unless you guys can, you know, match it, I'm taking my business. And
exactly.
I'm going there.
Exactly.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Makes it hard. Makes it hard. Well, the good news is we got beautiful Monmouth Park, the shore's greatest stretch, and Haskell Day tomorrow. And hope everybody that was planning on coming attends it. It's always a special day here, and it's one of the special days throughout the sport. Dennis, best of luck to everybody, and thanks for having us.
Thank
as
you.
As always.
Always a pleasure.
It's my pleasure.
You know, it's
thank
one
you.
Of my favorite days.
It should be. Should be. Haskell Day. And Dennis Drazen, everybody. We'll get Tom Cassidy in as well before noon, and sitting and standing by, James Scully, who I paused for a chance to talk to Dennis. And James, let's make some selections. Talk about the action. Do you want to talk Haskell first?
Yes, sir. I'll start with the Haskell. You know, I like King for a Day in there. And I'll just say this. I'm always on the lookout at this time of year for a late blooming three-year-old. Two of the last three-year-old champions did not race in the Triple Crown. You can go, like, even the Breeders' Cup when three-year-olds win that race. I think three of the last four, six of the last eight either didn't run in the Triple Crown or, you know, were no factor. And to me, you know, he came back of a six-month layoff in the Sir Bart, and that was a good effort. He's a presser stalker type. In the Pegasus, he had to go after Maximum Security just to track him, to chase him, to keep from a clear lead. In mid-stretch of that Pegasus, Maximum Security, they enter the stretch head-and-head. Mid-stretch, Maximum Security looks like he's forced ahead, put him away, you know, opens up by about three parts of a length. And then King for a Day showed an additional gear. I thought it was super visually impressive. That was an element he had not had in his arsenal. That's a sign of a good horse. And that race came back fast, 105 Brisnet speed rating, top two-turn three-year-old route stakes race this year. I think he has more to offer, and I think he's going to be stalking. I don't think there's any reason for John V to be caught up dueling with you know, half the field. So I'm going to give it King for the Day of the edge.
Very good. Who do you want to use underneath?
I definitely want to use Mucho Gusto, and if for some reason he doesn't get the right trip or he's rank or anything like that, Mucho Gusto, I think, is the second most likely winner. I understand Maximum Security, you know, first race in 6 weeks, you know, came out of that Derby. It was a rough trip. But to me, I'm just a little bit worried that he is not as sharp presently as he was, you know, coming out of the winter and into the spring. Willing to play against him tomorrow, Steve.
Very good. Let's turn our attention to Del Mar and some thoughts there. Haven't had a chance to really talk about the slate. I did mention that in the Beat Bic promotion, the first race going to be the San Clemente. But you got a lot going on at Del Mar tomorrow. Got some thoughts?
Yeah, sure. I'll mention a horse real quick at a price in race three, number three, Red Clem, 15-1 morning line. He's trained by Steve Sherman. Steve Sherman, 2-for-4. Had Hollywood Hills run down a 1-9 shot off a fifth-place effort at Golden Gate Fields. Rick Clem might not be good enough to win, but he could hit the board there at odds, coming off two wins in 2 seconds. Catalina Cruiser is back in the San Diego. Looks to really have that field at his mercy, I thought. The second of the three stake races is race six, that Daisy Cutter. And I really think if Little Bit Me can avoid being too far, you know, left too far behind, I think she's going to get the perfect setup. I love the cutback to sprint that she's found her niche in that. And she really ran a big race in that Unbottled Sydney two starts back, beat Morticia that day. I like her for Richard Baltus with Joel Rosario at 5-1 the morning line, a Little Bit Me.
What else we got?
All right, in race number seven, I'll tell you that I think the horses Vegan and Side Street Dave are vulnerable, the favorites with experience. I like the 3-1 Fast Bro. Coyle, not much of a sire overall, but he actually had 8 2-year-old winners first crop, 11% first out, which are good numbers for a low producer sire like him. And this Reeves family has raced one of this dam's offspring. It was 1 Fast Broad. She won first out at Del Mar, was a multiple juvenile stakes winner, won Fast Bro, shows a solid half-mile work. He's got a shot in there. The other horse, the Fear, is the six big returns. Luis Mendez had a missed fall line last night, went by 10-plus lengths. And this colt has a little bit of speed and talent, horses in his female family. Turning to San Clemente, you know, I'm definitely plenty of pace signed on for that race, Steve. Yeah. And, you know, I'm number nine, Maximum Rate's going to have a big chance for Simon Callahan. You know, I like the fact that she won two of her first three and then was really a dawdling pace last time. But I wound up, I'm going to make overemphasize my top pick. Really thought that was a sharp win at a mile distance, the same distance as tomorrow, three back. Has come back and really, I think, offered a solid run for Michael McCarthy in two starts since then. They stay with Alonso Quinones, and I like her chances in there.
Nice. I used overemphasize as my scratch horse, and for the contest, for the beat pick contest, for week one and race one, there'll also be a race on Sunday. Mucho Unusual. I thought, first of all, I like Rosario getting back aboard, and I think that he's or she's more tactical to sit behind that speed. And I think Rosario, you know, picks his spot and moves appropriately. In there, but it's a good group, and I don't know if you looked at the maiden race that follows, but there happens to be a little bit of pedigree going on there. I thought I made, where are they? I made a couple of pedigree notes, or maybe that was on Sunday. Maybe that might be Sunday.
I mean, yeah, really Sunday. Remarkable. This is a two-year-old filly, five furlong May. She met a maiden race. She got no Bob Baffert, no Sadlers, no real high-profile barns in this race. And I like that Pure Zana. I don't know what price it's going to be. That's the top seller for Warriors Reward. I mean, $370 they paid. This horse has not missed a beat since first work in mid-May. Really solid drills. You know, Dam's thrown some runners. Definitely looks dangerous. You know, that Save the Story is going to be the favorite for Baltus. And, you know, I can't knock her chances because that Amalfi Sunrise is a Constitution filly who beat her first time out and, you know, could be decent, could be nice. But, and so I really thought it was between those two in that race, Steve. And then I'll just say in the final race, there's some speed signed on in that race as well. I took a look at Battle of Memphis shipping in and out of a Salty Allowance. Overdue, definitely a contender in there for Phil D'Amato. But I like number six, Cajun Treasure, for Peter Erton and Brice Blanc. Really a nice maiden win on February 28th, three starts back. Two of the four horses that have come back to run out of that race have both won. You know, had it drew the rail in its second start, draw a line through that, was a little ranked that day. Last time out, Overdue was second, but, you know, Cajun Treasure was coming late that day. The winner of that race had a Ignatia, who's been a disappointment, is out of Honest Lady, but had a huge seasoning edge and got the right trip. Cajun Treasure is moving forward, and I think he's going to be rolling in the lane in the finale tomorrow.
Well, we're rolling toward our finale, and Tom Cassidy going to join us from TVG next. James Scully. I appreciate it. James_Scully111 brought to you by Twin Spires, where players win. James, good luck this weekend, and
talk to
you and Ed next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good. Good luck.
Scully, everybody. And I knew it was going to be a full day, and it played out, to say the least. And we did not. This is the second time in about a month, I think, that we did not have a break at all. We just had one guest stacked up after another, and we're going to close out strong as Tom Cassidy joins us. You know, Tom, Jessica Paquette wrote me about a TVG 20th anniversary visit. So yes. Congratulations. You're the lucky voice of the 20th anniversary of TVG.
Well, I'm honored and very lucky to be a part of 8 years of those 20 so far. And It's been a lot of fun, and it's great to be here at Monmouth Park, of course. You know, this is home, so it's a pleasure to be able to come here every day and cover the races for TVG. And, you know, I cannot be thankful enough to be in the position I'm in.
So. Well, and it's a family affair here, too. I mean, the first person I saw was Mrs. Cassidy.
Yep. Yep. I'm lucky to know her to be able to get into Monmouth Park. She's got all the connections. You know, the phone calls I used to get for passes and stuff, I no longer get. I think they just go right to her now.
So. Too funny.
But, very lucky. And, you know, it's funny. I think about a thing that you said about Monmouth Park a few years ago when you were here, same Haskell week. I think you said Monmouth Park's grandstand, the building looks like it could be a wedding cake.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I drive in here together every day, and sometimes pulling in the parking lot, that comes back to mind. It's truly a beautiful place, a wonderful place, and we're both very lucky and thankful.
Well, happy to be able to close out my couple of days here this year for Haskell. And
where's the blueberry or where's the coffee cake? I remember a couple years ago
I
showed up with some coffee cake.
You
we
know
all
what?
Sat around, had a couple laughs, cup of coffee.
That was from Bradley Beach. Was that the Pino? The Pinos, I think. Oh no, was it one of the places here?
I don't remember. I know you said it was good. We had some. We all agreed, and then went on our way.
it was from. I'm pretty sure. I want to say. The Pinos, I think, in Bradley Beach.
I'll take your word for
it. But we didn't go in that direction. We didn't really head in that direction so far in these first couple of nights. We did Red Bank, and we stayed in Long Branch. Where are we going tonight? Tonight, I think we're back in Long Branch. We're going to, oh, my gosh, where are we going tonight? For goodness sakes.
Are you going down to Pier Village, down that way?
No, another Italian joint. I mean, we're just suckers for.
Did you go to Jimmy's?
Not this trip. Okay. In fact, Mikey Farrow took us. Me and Siaka. Siaka and I came down. And Gary was sending a horse out. This is about 4 or 5 years ago, and then we were after the horse ran okay, ran third, I think, and then we met Mikey Farrow at and had Jimmy's Old School, and I brought Tina. I brought Tina on that summer. I brought Tina to Jimmy's, and she loved it. But we keep finding – I told Frank about Semolina in Red Bank.
I heard you talk about that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, it just was beyond description.
You said you had the gnocchi, right? Is that what you got?
I had the agnolotti, which is typically like a – kind of like a half moon – almost a tortelloni shape.
Yeah.
A little smaller than a tortelloni. Was unbelievable. Unbelievable. With a corn dressing, zucchini flour. Forget about it. It's ridiculous.
It's almost lunchtime.
Exactly. Well, you know, the saddest thing, though, is Ocean View. Ocean View is closed. The bakery with the subs.
Okay.
And too sad. And I mean, they were ancient. I'm going to forget her name. Oh, my gosh. There's a friend of mine from Thorograph who is from here. And he would keep me up to date about their health, and the husband died, and she kept it open another maybe 2 years.
Okay.
And a chicken parm sandwich with fresh mozz and balsamic and roasted red peppers. I think it's just sick. Crazy. Unbelievable.
All right. A lot of good spots.
We're hung up. Listen, this is very bad. Well, where did I send you? I sent you to a place that I sent you to Ocean View 1 year.
I think you did a couple years ago.
Before they disappeared. And there was someplace else I could have sworn. But I wasn't here last year. So anyway, we're making up for lost time.
Happy to see you back here this year. That's for sure.
Give us some pushes. Give us some ideas. What's your Haskell plan for tomorrow?
So I guess I probably took the easy way out, but I went with Maximum Security tomorrow.
Yeah. Why not?
You know, and Mucho Gusto, I think, might be the likeliest upsetter if we want to go that route. I know he's the second choice. Everfast, I think he's going to take some play. I think he's probably going to be the wise guy horse, if you will. You know, with all the speed there looks to be on paper and the way he was running at the end of the Preakness to close the finish second, I think he'll probably get quite a bit of respect. I think he's the one to try to get in third, maybe to try to, you know, he might be 8-9-1 at the end and try to get a little value in the exactas and tries, but... You know, Maximum Security, I just think, drawn to the outside. He's got the versatility. If they want to go, he can go. If they don't, he can sit. He can stalk. He can pass horses. And, you know, I think he's I think he's going to show up with a big race on Saturday.
The speed quotient here with horses that all seem to have the same running style except for Everfast. Randy Moss started the show by picking Everfast.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah.
So
yeah, and wouldn't be surprised to see him rolling late and run well. And you know, if he jumps up and wins, I think you're going to get $17, $16, or somewhere along those lines. But going back to what you said earlier, you know, you don't need a 12 horse field to have the great discussions we're having about this year's race. I mean, it's a race where we can come up with a lot of different scenarios and a lot of different contenders and possibilities. And, you know, it's certainly going to be part of a very good card. And you know, it's Jersey's signature event, you know. So it's always a lot of fun to be around it.
Speaking of signature events, in comes Katie May herself, Caitlin Bradar, and Gabby Gaudette. Jump over here quickly. No, leave that headset on. I got the stick mic. Where'd the stick mic go? Let's get
right
this way. I can add two more names to the roster.
Yeah.
And just share that together. All right. Let me push and say hi.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Gabby and I have been driving. You know, you'd think I never worked here before, but, and I was saying, well, it was 22 years ago. So just in fairness, we have been driving around the neighborhood in traffic for
traffic.
Well,
it's not even sad. It's not even
Haskell
Day yet.
Something though. We've seen everything this morning. We passed a fire station and there was like a fire truck that was overflowing. And then that was, there was a lot of stuff that happened. And here's the funniest thing about it. Whenever I drive with Caitlin, there's always something that happens. And I feel like we drive together a lot.
You two were like Steve Haskin and Mick. And because they, wherever they would go, there would be news. There would be something newsworthy.
Yeah, well, that really has been the case. And a lot, usually it's I sort of start it. I mean, I hope it's not, if for the older generation, it would be Lucy and Ethel, but for probably the newer, be Thelma and Louise a little bit. But I seem to get lost a lot, and I also have trouble at gas stations. But that is another story. When we get to Keeneland, we can tell you all about it, because that's where we usually are doing our road trips as well.
Yeah, that was crazy, but we don't have enough time for, you probably don't have enough time for that.
Yeah, but well, the best part, I have to say this, and Gabby said, you know, when we come in, she was here a couple weeks ago, and she said, when we come in, I think, that really wonderful lady that was in the parking lot will still be there. And I said, Gabby, that wonderful lady that's in the parking lot, Carolyn, has been in the parking lot for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing. This is more than any other track I've ever been at across the country. When I come in, I saw Carolyn in the parking lot. I saw Jim at the, you walk in at the Horseman's Gate. It's the only place I never have to worry about where am I going to park? Do I have a press credential yet? And I heard somebody saying, where do we park tomorrow for the big day? She said, same way as we do every day. And I said, I love Monmouth for that. It's a horseman. This is like real racing, real horsemen. I mean, there's real spirit here in community.
And I haven't been, prior to being here a couple of weeks ago, I hadn't been here since I was probably a teenager with my dad. And every single summer, my dad would come up here with a string of horses, and it was very nostalgic for me. I didn't think it would hit me like that, but it really did. So, Miles Feld was our cameraman, and we went to the pizza place down the road, Nunzio's, where mm-hmm. Dad used to take us all the time. And, you know, it was BYOB.
Yep.
It was cash only. And we just had a pie, and, you know, and just being at the racetrack and seeing all these familiar faces. It's awesome to be here.
And yesterday I hit up, Doug actually came with me on this trip. We got here in time for lunch, so we drove straight from Newark to Max's.
Because
I said, well, it's a ritual. He had never been there before, so I really felt that he needed to. But what I can't wait is to try to get some Italian ice, because that is, especially with the weather. Yep.
They were there last night.
So.
I can hear music in the background starting. Who you like tomorrow?
I'm leaning toward King for the Day.
Fair enough.
I think Maximum Security is going to turn around. I do.
No, he's only got to turn around. Yeah. You know,
I just think the stumble completely cost him. And most of the time, you know, when that happens, horses, you know, can either cut themselves or something, it can happen. Sure. And I just think with outside post position, it puts him in an advantageous position.
Yeah, the flip-flop of inside, outside. There are five horses in between them, so it should be interesting. Tom, we only talked Haskell with you. Yep. What's a good horse tomorrow that you're going to give people?
Tomorrow you're going to be upset with me. Need to do a little more work, but looking at Lemonade Thursday in a Monmouth Cup.
Okay.
For Arnaud Delacour.
Nothing wrong with that.
And I am excited to see Midnight Bisou.
Absolutely.
I mean, always exciting to go watch her.
They're charging for photos. It's like a kissing booth over there. You can go. Jeff Bloom. Jeff Bloom is bringing people over hand over fist. Unbelievable. Kate and Bradar and Gabby Gaudette close it out after Jerry Bailey and Randy Moss started us. Tom Cassidy, Dennis Drazen, James Scully, Drew Cuoto for Jerry Hollendorfer and Frank Miramati, who's here now. Sure, now you show up. Where's your Messiah now? And Gary West earlier, too. Is that everybody? Bailey, Moss, West. Hammer. Miramati, Hammer. Quoto, Drazen, Scully, Cassidy, Bradar, and Gaudette. It's the biggest law firm in the world. Great job by Joe back in the studio the last few days. We will be with you on Monday. Enjoy the two or three venues that are running tomorrow, including right here at Monmouth Park. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you Monday.